Hi, this is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions, and you're listening to Briefings Direct. Today we present a sponsored podcast discussion coming to you from the Open Group's Security Practitioners Conference in Boston, the week of July 19th, 2010. We've assembled a panel to examine the need for improved common defenses, including advancing cooperation between enterprise architects and chief security officers, to jointly defend against burgeoning cybersecurity threats. The risks are coming from both inside enterprises as well as myriad external sources. We'll learn more about the nature of these borderless external cybersecurity threats as they emerge from criminal enterprises, globally competitive business sources, and even state-based threats, and sometimes a combination of these. We'll also hear recommendations on developing smarter processes for cybersecurity based on proven methods and pervasive policies. So to help broaden the scope of enterprise architecture and to develop a leverage point for mission architecture, levels of security and defenses, please join me in welcoming a security executive from the Open Group, as well as two cybersecurity experts who are presenting here at the conference. Allow me to introduce you to General Harry Radigy. He's the chairman of the Deloitte Center for Cyber Innovation. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Dean. It's good to be here with you.
We're also here with Usman Sindhu. He's a researcher at Forrester Research.
Thank you, Dana. Good to be here.
And Jim Hightella, Vice President of Security at the Open Group.
Hi, Dana.
Let's start with you, Harry, if you don't mind. Tell us a little bit about the nature of the threat, and perhaps there's a level of the intensity about these external threats that the enterprise practitioners, the architects, don't perhaps quite appreciate yet.
Well, thank you very much. We were here today at this conference, and we were able to put a few of these areas, as you've mentioned, into perspective. And as far as the world of cyberspace, it's a tremendous opportunity for us to really gain the benefits of being able to communicate not only nationally, but also internationally and across all borders in the area of cyber. But with that openness comes these new threats and certainly the vulnerabilities that we have of operating in cyberspace are magnified by the threats that are out there today. And these threats really are in the areas of identity theft, information manipulation, information theft, cyber crime, the insider threats that are prevalent in many of our organizations and companies today, the threat of espionage, of losing lots of intellectual property from our businesses, the cyber attacks that are taking place, denial of service, and also the threat of the future that we see on the horizon of potentially cyber terrorism.
And if you're a business or a government agency, perhaps a multinational corporation, is there a commonality? Is everyone getting hit the same by these sorts of things? Who's vulnerable? Who isn't?
Well, the internet and all of our connections network-wide in cyberspace are across all nations of the world. In fact, this is an international problem and an opportunity for us to take advantage of. Basically, Dana, we're all in this together. And so this is why the significance of this type of a gathering here today, to talk about the real benefits of cyberspace, but also to talk about the issues of cybersecurity that are facing us all, but the importance of the underlying foundational aspects of having a great enterprise architecture, which today is really pointing more toward a mission architecture for business success.
Are there commonalities, more need for standards, practical ways that cut across the different types of organizations that perhaps are in the works, but that other people aren't aware of? That is to say, how important is education towards moving against some of these common threats?
Absolutely. Well, a number of organizations like the Open Group are working on the common standards that are so important for the international community to comply with and to have as guiding factors. Frankly, the education of this is very important. Developing a cyber mindset across all people of the world, not only in the government organizations, but industry, and also the individual users at home. The aspects of education and training and awareness of what's going on there in cyber is paramount for the proper operation, but also the protection of your critical information.
Harry, are there things that are going on within governments and not just in the U.S. that, in a sense, are buttressing the protections and reducing the risk for enterprises that maybe enterprises aren't aware of? And how could that cooperation between public and private perhaps improve?
Absolutely. Well, since everyone is a member of this international community in cyberspace, everyone's trying to address the issues that are so common to each one of us. And so many, many people are bringing best practices to the table. We're learning from each other's experiences. And as I mentioned earlier, we're all in this together. So the international cooperation, the international collaboration, the opportunity to meet and discuss these areas is very, very valuable to all of us individually and to our companies and to our nations.
Great, thanks. Usman, you had an interesting presentation. Tell us a little bit about this notion of smarter. How is it that organizations, particularly enterprises, need to adjust their thinking in order to better protect themselves?
So I guess we're living in a very exciting time in terms of the innovation as well as the adoption of technology. And there's one kind of inventor, Ray Kurzweil, who talks about the law of accelerating returns. And what he says is that we are experiencing the 20,000 years of adoption, technology growth, in fact, in 21st century. That to mean that we will have a lot of innovations, but more so technology adoption in a much more accelerated fashion. And that's where the SMART concept comes in. The SMART concept entails smartening our physical infrastructure, which range from our critical infrastructure like utility, healthcare, financial services, transportation, public safety, and also the city administrations, down to the IT system itself. So use of a lot of IT enablement ranging from either the cloud or communication infrastructure like RFID technologies, 4G technologies, cellular technologies, to embed a lot of situational awareness, analytics, and locationing into the systems. And I think the need of this is present because if you look across the board on some of the incidents or some of the events, not to go too far, but the BP incident shows us that the inefficiencies in our physical infrastructure, which is in a siloed way, presents a huge opportunity for technology growth. Now, this is a smart kind of a concept that embeds itself into smart city infrastructure, where all the different components I mentioned embed all the IT technologies together. And also there are other initiatives like smarter grid or smart healthcare, and so on and so forth, that are embedding these IT technologies in there. Now, with that, yes, a great way to start to the 21st century and go into this innovation, but the need for security arises at its the same time. And as General Radighi mentioned, that the cyberspace is a new frontier, or what I call information security in the cyber world is the new frontier, and that's where we have to address a lot of different issues, problems around policy, architecture, and best practices which need to go forward. And it's only going to get serious as we connect a lot of different systems together, which were not connected in the past.
So from Forrester Research's perspective, this smartness isn't just a technical smartness. It's really also the policies, the methods, the best practices. Tell me a little bit more about why and best practices fit into this notion of smartness. And then also maybe revisit a little bit about how the threat increases with that interconnectivity.
Yes, precisely. If we look traditionally, security in general has been a very point technology. It's driven to point technologies. Even in government space, there's been a lot of focus around just technologies. And I think earlier today in other sessions, we saw that how the importance of point technologies has been overemphasized rather than the risk analysis and the process. So today, many organizations across the board, including the public and private sector, are waking up to this, that technology alone is not the answer. It's the process and people as well. And that's where the deriving these best practices would be a key, collaborating with the private and public sector, and bringing an architecture that support all three silos. And as far as this interconnectivity is concerned, you will see a lot of different B2B interactions, B2C interactions. It happens today. Today, the business partners, distributors do business on the go, on the social media, either the Twitter feeds or the Facebook, or something I call ad hoc communication to their mobile devices, and so on and so forth. This is the nature of today's interaction. This is the nature of B2C and B2B interactions. With that, your threat vectors increase manifold, because we tend to look at more of a primitized notion of security. But today, if you look out there, we are actually in a stock market situation where information is flowing all over the place, and we have no perimeter, so to speak. So we need to understand this reprimitization rather than deprimitization, that how do we put security control at the proper threat vectors and the threat levels?
I suppose one area where increased connectivity is not a threat is in connecting more of the stakeholders in the enterprise that perhaps have a role or a piece of the security puzzle for them to be a bit more cooperative, coordinated. So tell me a little bit about how smartness fits into collaboration between, say, architects, chief security officers, and other stakeholders.
It's a great question, actually. One of the key aspects of smartness is cross-industry and cross-team collaboration. Today, when we start to look at some of the smart deployments, either in the vertical sectors like utilities or the healthcare, or even so coming down to the other private sector industries, we see that more and more security, for instance, is getting attention into the board level and C-level executive. Similarly, the enterprise architecture is getting its attention as well. Going forward, we see a great emphasis and focus on combining these two initiatives together, even though it's still a very nascent stage. A lot more at the board level talks and C-level talks. We are not seeing a huge focus on the cybersecurity in some instances, but of course it is changing, it's increasing. Fair to say that the security and enterprise architecture will play a key role as both of the concepts mingle together to bring about best practice and architecture in early phase into the planning, deployment, and delivery of the smart services.
And how about that, Jim Hytel, at the Open Group, you're all working with frameworks, certification, defining and professionalizing the role of the enterprise architect. How well are we doing the imbuing of security into that larger picture of enterprise architecture as well as technology and process?
Well, I would kind of echo what Usman said, that it's early days for really bringing enhanced security into the profession of enterprise architecture. So in the Open Group, our TOGAF, the Open Group Architecture Framework, through the 9 iterations of it, we've now added a significant kind of security information and content that enterprise architects need to bear in mind in developing architectures. But that work's ongoing. We have a couple of projects both to enhance the security of TOGAF and also to work to collaborate with the SABSIF folks and other security architecture development methodology to kind of harmonize those two approaches. So there's a lot of work ongoing there, and I think there's a lot of work needed in developing reference architectures outside of purely IT. So we have a document that we're updating called Enterprise Security Architecture. It'll be published this fall. That updates some work that was done 5 or 6 years ago. But that's really sort of an IT reference architecture. We see a need, as you start to look at cybersecurity and the different kinds of architectures, to develop new reference architectures, potentially to address some of these new applications of IT technology to everyday lives. So if you think about networks in cars, networks, smart devices comprising the power grid, what does security look like for those things? So our membership is starting to look at some of those and try and determine where we can add some value there for the industry.
Okay, great. Let's think a little bit more now about this notion of mission architecture. The Open Group and many organizations are involved with enterprise architecture. But Harry, what do we mean by mission architecture? What does that mean, and how does that relate perhaps to the concept of enterprise architecture?
Well, of course, the internet has changed our world and the way we operate. And for years, we have had enterprise architects who have been working down the hall or in the basements of organizations that have been trying to figure out the best way of technically aligning the internet and all of the interconnected networks to make it work as best it could. And now that this world of cyber has really come upon us, it has really elevated the importance of the enterprise architect into the higher levels of an organization, just because of the threats that are constantly coming upon us in our business operations and our mission success. So now the enterprise architect has gotten the attention of the C-suite executives and organization leadership. But they don't like to think as much about enterprise architecture because it really has that technical connotation. As my colleagues here have mentioned, you know, we're really talking and focusing more now on the people and the process aspects of running the business properly. So I think the front office people, the C-suite executives and leaders of organizations, instead of thinking about enterprise architecture from a technical aspect, they're really taking a look more now and becoming much more interested in a mission architecture. In other words, what's the architecture needed to complete my mission so that I can have success? Whatever your mission is, if it's government activity or whether it's industry. And so this mission architecture has taken on new meaning that takes into account the technical architecture, but also adds, you know, the workforce domain and the process elements of the organization. So mission architecture is really pointing toward business success, whatever your business is, whether it's government operations or industry.
Usman, how do you relate mission architecture to your discussion about being smarter?
Yeah, so a couple of things, I guess, which comes from the mission architecture perspective is of course, from a smart aspect in general, but also what we're seeing in the industry is the IT risk baseline, for example. There has been a lot of work done, and I guess it gets even more important that how do you derive an IT risk baseline? In essence, if you look across, the architecture is important, but there is no silver bullet to it. Since the smart concept is industry-wide, is globally, there could be many reference architectures that could go in. But I guess what some of the things starting to happen, in fact, is, for instance, the Department of Homeland Security came up with a IT risk baseline about a year and a half ago, which collaborated with the IT vendors and IT sector in general, and started to create this risk baseline, which comes about in earlier phases of the architecture. So as you develop a framework where you take feed from the various industry standards, regulatory compliance mandates, you start to create a risk baseline. You create a risk profile, which goes along, touches every single silo of people, process, and technology. And over the time, you do the collaboration, not only, as we mentioned, internally, but externally as well. And also, you do the marketing of it. You market the risk baseline component so that you are complying with it, but you're also educating this into your peers and your other adjacent industries. So the smart concept at its heart would require a lot of collaboration among public and private sector, and I'm seeing a lot of this has been kind of driven by the government. As I mentioned, the Department of Homeland Security is working on this risk baseline. They are actually working on coming with the next iteration of this baseline maybe next year. So I'm seeing a more cohesive approach, even though a lot of work needs to be done here. And in distinct industries like smart grid, for example, there's been a lot of focus around standards. For instance, National Institutes of Standards and Technology is working on creating a cybersecurity baseline and framework that touches the interoperability as well as the security standards, almost taking feed from 73 standards across the board. So I think there has been a lot of work need to be done, but we are still at a very early stage.
As we elevate from IT concerns to architecture and enterprise concerns, and now we're talking at the mission architecture level, do we run the risk of this becoming a hot potato? That is to say, no one really owns it, it gets handed around. How do we organize a approach to a mission architecture in such a way that it's got the right level of command and control and yet is inclusive? Any thoughts around the organizational imperative, Harry?
Sure. Well, I think maybe we can take a page from what the United States government has just recently gone through with organizational concepts, because we knew that many different activities across the federal government had a big piece in part to play in securing cyberspace. Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense, the intelligence community, Department of Interior, Department of Commerce, Department of State. Every one of those federal government activities had a specific role to play in securing cyberspace. However, we found out that there was no one totally in charge of orchestrating the total elements and activities of our federal government. So, with the president's cyberspace policy review, he decided to appoint the first ever White House cybersecurity coordinator, which is Howard Schmidt. And so now Howard is the overarching orchestrator for all of our federal government activities, and additionally all the state and local and interfaces with industry and also into the international community. So I guess if we were going to think about an organizational construct, our nation is led with that kind of an example of an individual at the top who provides the oversight and is also responsible and accountable for the proper operation of cyberspace and the cybersecurity elements.
Jim Hytel at the Open Group, any thoughts about this organizational angle in terms of the personnel, their roles, and a rethinking perhaps of how these categories have so far been structured?
I guess I'd say, you know, sort of from an enterprise perspective, looking at mission success and thinking about cybersecurity, it really is the CISO role inside a given enterprise that probably is most relevant to address the issues. I think the interesting thing is that many of the new developments that we're looking at, whether it's smarter hospitals, smarter medical devices, smarter electrical grid, and so forth, that many of those developments are really sort of industry specific, and they require a lot of cooperation between organizations in an industry. So I think there's a role for standards organizations and industry organizations to pull the various organizations together and come up with some common standards that facilitate better security, maybe better frameworks, things like that, that can be leveraged across an entire industry.
Any thoughts about getting started? Where do you get traction on a problem like this? Again, we've got a lot of different stakeholders, many different, you know, formerly siloed types of activities and technologies. Where do you begin to actually get a hold of this and make some impact?
I think it really depends on the industry. So, but I think where you get started is just getting smart people in a room and trying to find consensus around the problems and potential solutions. So we do a lot of that here at the Open Group in various different areas. So we have a lot of kind of defense work that we're doing with suppliers to the military, those sorts of things. We get them in a room and drive consensus out of them and develop standards and best practices that all of them can leverage and that help their business and help them be more secure.
As Harry mentioned, there's some examples in the U.S. government and other governments, I imagine, as well, where they've attacked this problem. They've made some strides, developed some approaches, methods. Is there an opportunity for increased public to private cooperation and standardization? And can you think of any examples of how that's working?
Yeah, I can definitely see that there is a need for increased sort of public sector and private industry cooperation. We have an initiative here at the Open Group that we're driving called the Acquisition Cybersecurity effort that actually was brought to us by the Department of Defense as a consulting effort. They really wanted an organization to pull together private industry and try and drive some standards looking at the supply chains to the major IT suppliers. So that work is ongoing here, and that would be a good reference of an initiative like that.
Harry, how about from your perspective, getting started, where do you get a handle on this beast?
Well, as my colleagues here mentioned, a lot of times in private industry, there's a number of individuals who, just like in the federal government, who have specific areas of expertise and responsibilities in the organization. And I can see from the boardroom perspective sometimes that this could be a little confusing because you'll have a chief information officer and a chief information security officer and a chief privacy officer and a chief management officer and a chief financial officer and a chief operations officer. So doesn't this sound kind of familiar to what even our federal government has looked like? Everybody has a specific role that is very, very important, but then who is the one person then that talks to the CEO or talks to the board? And I know a lot of organizations wrestle with that concept. A number of years ago, 1996 to be specific, there was actually legislation, the Clinger-Cohen Act, which was officially called the Information Technology Management Reform Act, that said that across the entire federal government there would be CIOs appointed. And that they would report directly to agency heads. And, of course, that is guided our federal government for quite some time. But certainly, these aspects of all the different areas need to be brought together and focused within organizations. And I think we really have our work cut out for us.
Okay. And to you, Usman, perhaps some thoughts about getting started on the process of getting smarter.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would like to kind of echo from the previous question as well is that it is interesting to see how long it took security to get the attention it needed, but finally it is getting the attention at the C-level. From the budget's perspective as well, they are getting a much better share of the IT budgets than it had before. So I think there's a good momentum across it around understanding security early in the development phase of a project or a product or any other deployment. Now, when the cybersecurity is talked about, this is another total new beast kind of for many organizations to deal with. And in fact, I was speaking to one of the utility clients and the cybersecurity lead mentioned that he has no kind of approach or visibility into the earlier phases of when the vendors are selected or when the RFPs are made. He only comes the second tier when he has to accredit all the different vendors. So I think there's still a good kind of ramp we need to cross at this from getting this attention at the earlier phase from a security professional perspective, and the cyber has to be on that agenda as a top priority. Now for smart initiatives, I guess the same thoughts that you need to get security involved and architecture involved earlier in the phase. I normally put it down to the three-level or a three-phased approach where we talk about the planning. Many of the smart initiatives today, either they are smart city, smart grid, or smart healthcare, are mostly in the planning phase. Down the road, in the year or two, we'll see a lot more deployments, so much so that deployments are happening today as well, but we'll see a lot more deployments in the year two phase. And then the delivery phase would come where the smart services will be delivered to the consumers and businesses. Now, the role of the architecture and security has to be right from the planning phase. Where do you manifest the value of security being built in, either to the products or in general to the architecture? So that has to be the first step, that we acknowledge the need today to embed that into the overall process.
Well, great. Thanks so much. We've been discussing the need for improved common defenses, including advancing cooperation between enterprise architects and security officers, and to jointly defend against burgeoning cybersecurity threats. This sponsored podcast discussion is coming to you from the Open Group Security Practitioners Conference in Boston, the week of July 19th, 2010. I'd like to thank our guests. We've been here with General Harry Radtke, Chairman of the Deloitte Center for Cyber Innovation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Usman Sindhu, researcher at Forrester Research. Thanks for input.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And Jim Hightella, Vice President of Security for the Open Group. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Dana.
This is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions. You've been listening to Briefings Direct. Thanks for joining, and come back next time.